First, I would just like to say my profound thanks to the subcommittee. I think that given the competition this year, it would have been very easy to slide over a book like mine about a forgotten ball player by a guy who's never written a book before in the face of all the other excellent books that they had. I think the committee did an extremely conscientious job. They obviously gave this book a hard look, and of course, like anybody, I am flabbergasted, you know, that to even have my name mentioned in the same breath with Lawrence Ritter. That's hard. I can't imagine a higher honor that I could ever achieve as somebody who, I'm an old newspaper man, so in one form or another, I've written something practically every day for the last 50 years. But this is clearly the high point of my quote-unquote literary career, and I'm really grateful, and I'm having a ball also. I'm just having the time of my life. As I say, you know, as an itinerant bookseller, I've been putting together kind of a do-it-yourself book tour in Western Ohio, and it's just been a hoot. But to get on to a couple of the things that I wanted to talk about specifically this morning, the why of Bob Ewing, and of course that's a question everybody asks because, you know, out of all the thousands of ball players, why Bob Ewing of all people? The main thing is basically I just kind of found him in my backyard. I live in Lima, Ohio, which is about 15 miles north of where he lived basically his entire life. And I'm a lifelong Reds fan, as John said. Ewing spent the vast majority of his big league career with the Reds. I've always been interested in baseball history, the Reds history, history in general. And here's Ewing, who was a fairly significant player for the Reds a long time ago. And he just seemed like kind of a natural for me. The other thing, I said I'm an old newspaper man, and I found out very quickly that if I was going to learn about Bob Ewing, I was going to have to go back to the old newspapers, because in terms of subsequent decades and secondary sources, the man has rarely ever even been mentioned in print. And nowhere have I ever found that anybody had written anything substantial about him. And so it was necessary to go back to the old newspapers, to the original first-hand eyewitness accounts that were written by people who saw the ball games, people who knew Bob. And that was fun, but it was, as I say, it was like he was kind of out there waiting for me, because all the elements that went into researching this book were kind of right up my street. It was the you know, a convergence of the three or four things that I am most interested in, you know, in life. So that part of it worked out very well. As far as what I've learned through the research process, I'm not even sure that I should clutter people's minds up. My research was, I think, very thorough in the end, but my process was not systematic at all. I think it was highly inefficient, which is one of the reasons it took me 16 years to finish this book. I think I crossed back over my own trail an awful lot of times and had to go back and relook at things. I would find something here and I'd say, wait a minute, that ties together with something I think I saw way back here that I didn't pay attention to at the time, but now I see that there might be a connection there that's worth being aware of. And so there was an awful lot of back and forth, a certain amount of wasted motion probably. But basically, my process was just to look in every possible corner that I could think of that might shed some light on Bob Ewing or his career or the times that he lived in or baseball in those times or the people he was associated with. I'm sure I'm a little bit obsessive about things like that. I've sometimes referred to myself as a fact junkie, but I really did feel that it was necessary to find as many facts as I could and put them all in a big pile, because until you do that, you really don't know what you don't know. And I always was afraid there was one fact out there that would significantly alter my view of some significant aspect of Ewing's life. And it may still be out there. There probably is a fact I didn't find. The trouble with being a fact junkie is that you can't put every fact in the book. I had to leave 6 or 7 of them out of the book, and it pained me. It was an agonizing editing process. But it is also true that in some ways I think that obsessiveness did serve the book. I gave the manuscript to the publisher in May of last year. As late as April of last year, I was not only still tweaking and rewriting, I was actually still finding and adding information into the book. And there was one, I don't know how significant, but I thought it was poignant and noteworthy. It was not until April of last year that I found an obituary for Jerry McDonough, who was a teammate of Ewing's in Toledo, who died at 21 or 23 of an accident. He accidentally asphyxiated himself on a gas lighting fixture in his apartment in Toledo, which was the kind of thing that happened somewhat frequently. Harry Steinfeld almost did the same thing a few years later in Cincinnati. And I mean, up to that point, all I knew was that McDonough had died sometime during the off season between, I think it was 1899 and 1900, and that he had been asphyxiated, but I didn't know whether it was an accident or a suicide or when it happened or anything about the circumstances until literally about 2 weeks before I turned in the manuscript. And I just felt better about being able to say, this is how this happened, this is when it happened. And you know, again, maybe nobody but me would care. If it weren't in the book, nobody would miss it. But I thought it was, as I say, a poignant moment, especially because McDonough had also played semi-pro ball with Ewing and had played a significant role in getting Ewing signed to his first professional contract with the Toledo Mudhens, which they were then as they are now. So I really think it is important to do as much and as thorough research as you can, and then you can sift out, you know, what's significant and what's not. I think the other thing that I learned for a long time, for many years, I didn't even allow myself to think I was writing a book, and I certainly never told anybody I was writing a book. I shied as far away as I could from the B word, because I was very much intimidated by that. As much writing as I have done in my life, most of my career I was a newspaper columnist, and I got trained and geared to write 650 words 3 times a week, 650 words and stop. And I said, I don't know how to write a book. That's too long, it's too complicated. I can't sustain a story for that length. I just do not know how to do that. You know, it's totally alien to my experience. And of course, what I finally figured out, and it took me a long time, is that you don't have to write the whole book at a sitting. What you really have to do is break it down into manageable chunks. You break it down into chapters, and then I literally would outline every chapter, you know, what's going to be in it. And after that, I one thing I did that made this book easier than it might have been, maybe not as interesting to read, certainly not as sophisticated as it could have been, was I accepted the idea early on that I was going to just deal with it in a more or less straight chronological fashion. That if I tried to do anything fancier than that, I was just going to confuse myself. So at that point, it just becomes a matter of chronology. And periodically, at a couple of points in every chapter, I would come to a significant event, maybe a ball game or something like that, or a particular issue, like contract negotiations or the peace settlement between the American and National Leagues, that would require some deeper explanation or analysis. And I thought of those as kind of set pieces. And you go chronology, and then you have one of these set pieces, and you write that. It might be a few paragraphs, or it might be a few pages, but you write that set piece and plunk that in there, and then go on with the chronology. And if you can look at it that way, basically you're just writing the chapter, and you can sort of put the pieces together, and then all you have to do is go back and basically clean up the transitions from paragraph to paragraph, whatever. And I found that in the end, you know, you just proceed from the beginning to the end, and at some point in time, you're going to end up with a book. The thing that finally got me over the mental block about trying to attack something that size, it comes down to the answer to the classic question: how do you eat an elephant? Well, the answer is one bite at a time. And that's what writing a book was to me. It was like eating an elephant. And the other thing I would say to you is that if I can write a book, I'd bet a dollar to a donut that anybody in this room could write a book. I know several of you have. It's a long process, and it can be difficult. But if you have a story to tell that you are excited about, and can sustain that excitement. That's the other thing. I was in and out of this. There were periods of time where I did very little work, but once I came back to it, I never lost my enthusiasm for it. If you have that kind of a story to tell, I think you can write a book. And I also think that in most cases, my other problem was I didn't know whether anybody would be interested in reading this book. But if you're excited about it and can tell the story well, I think you're going to find there are other people that are also going to be interested. And if you're thinking about it, I would encourage you to go ahead and take a flyer with it and to try to find good people to bounce ideas off of, get yourself hooked up with a good editor. God bless Tom Simon, who I wish that he were here today, because I think he is as deserving of this award as I am. Did a fabulous job for me. A guy who had great knowledge of the era, has edited and or written several books of his own, and just gave me no end of good advice. I took most of it. I wish I had taken more. But that's, you know, that's what I would tell you. And again, I'm just very grateful to be here and very appreciative. Thank you all very much.